All right. Thanks again, everybody, for coming to our session this afternoon instead of hitting the parade route. I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into one of our interventions, but first off, I don't have anything to disclose. I'm going to talk a little bit about our care coordination readiness assessment, which Jack alluded to within our Beacon project. Before we really got a handle on what we were going to do with our diabetes community, specifically our clinics and hospitals, we really needed to understand the current status of diabetes care in our community. So we traveled around to a lot of the different rural clinics and hospitals and evaluated what they were doing at that current time. We observed a lot of the clinics had some type of diabetes registry. Our State Department of Health had a diabetes collaborative going on previous to our Beacon project, and so the diabetes registry was in place. So some were using those tools. Others were had electronic health records, or EHRs, to help manage their care or their population. Some of these clinics had care coordinators or some function of care coordination within the clinic, but it was varied between different clinics. And some were trying to do some post-discharge coordination, but again, information available to them at discharge was problematic. There was a lot of variation in care coordination services based on the size and capacity of each of the organizations, in particular rural versus urban. And across the board, we experienced a lot of gaps in the patient records just due to lack of information from other providers, as you might imagine. So essentially, this is what it looked like. We had a lot of different functions within the different clinics, but that red benchmark line is really where we wanted our community clinics and hospitals to be functioning, in particular the ambulatory clinics. The pink column, some clinics had a care coordinator and some were even beyond the pink column and didn't have a dietitian in their community, or a care coordinator, or a diabetes educator. And then by contrast, you had clinics that had lots of resources, even down to lifestyle coaches and case managers. And then we had clinics everywhere in between. And so our challenge was really to get a handle on the resources that clinics had at their fingertips and the resources that they were lacking, and then try to backfill those resources as part of our Beacon Community project. I'm going to come back to that slide. So we really needed to assess the readiness, and we looked at lots of different tools out there to help us assess readiness. I think Jack talked about the medical home strategies that we're implementing and part of our quality improvement coaching. So we looked at medical home index. There's some diabetes self-management indexes. There's the work of Eric Coleman on care transitions, but not one tool really touched on all the areas that we were looking to address in our Beacon project. So we created what we called the Care Coordination Readiness Assessment, or the Diabetes Care Coordination Readiness Assessment, and it has five domains in the tool with corresponding measures, and we looked at those five domains to be organizational capacity. How is the clinic functioning overall, and do they have medical home strategies for addressing access, for example, for their patients? We looked at care coordination capabilities. Do they have a care coordinator in their facility? Do they have someone managing referrals? We looked at diabetes case management services. Are they able to do the more complex services of diabetes education and management, such as continuing glucose monitoring and insulin pump therapy? We looked at quality improvement. Where are they in terms of their assessment of quality improvement skills and projects within their clinic? And then finally, we looked at the technical infrastructure and how they were functioning technically, what their goals and plans were for meaningful use, for example, and how we could meet somewhere in the middle for connectivity with our Beacon project. And importantly here, this was done in consultation with the providers and their staff. We didn't just email this tool to them and say, hey, can you fill it out and email it back to us? We got consultation from those key staff members in each of those five domain areas and sat down with them, which meant my co-partner, Dr. Hansen, and I were spending a lot of time on the road driving around those rural areas that you saw earlier in Jack's slide. But that was very useful because a lot of times there was a lot of conversation on these different domains and the different measures within the domain. And so in terms of our validation process, it was very interesting to hear and see what different members of the staff were saying about a particular measure. And we used the tool to determine the capacity in the future for quality improvement projects, in particular with the quality improvement coaches that Jack talked about. A lot of these clinics were desperately trying to get some sort of patient-centered medical home strategies adopted within their clinics. A lot of them were looking to actually be certified as medical homes. And so the resources that we were able to bring to them for QI projects and on-site coaching was very helpful for them. So again, the assessment just really helped us understand where they were and what their goals were. So I skipped over this side, the validation process. We really did look at all the linkages between care coordination and health information and how we were going to formulate our procedural process with implementing the tool and looking at how we could construct these measures off of proposed best practices and different measures that were out there in the different tools that I spoke about. So here's just a screenshot of the actual tool. We nicely color-coded the different domains. I don't know if you can see from the back of the room, but so there's several different objectives and measures within each of the domains, and we looked at really assessing if they were not prepared, moderately prepared, highly prepared, or actively performing on each of those measures. And so that's where a lot of the conversation came in terms of where they felt the clinic was on those particular measures. And then to help us formulate a plan for implementing resources, we assessed the level of importance to the practice. That's on the far column there. If it was high, medium, or low, that measure was important to the clinic. And then, again, helping us assess what those quality improvement and resource acquisitions were looking at, the variation among providers in that practice. So are all the providers doing the measure the same way, or are they all doing it a different way? And that obviously helps us with our quality improvement projects, and you know, if they're all doing something a different way, that might be a perfect place to start in terms of a QI project. Here's just a close-up example as I was talking about. So you can see here, this is the domain 2 under care coordination. You know, are they using current standards for diabetes medical care into their practice? The 2.2 was a very hot topic. Do they have a staff position dedicated to diabetes care coordination in proportion to the actual patient caseload? So those were just an example of some of the measures there. So we have a little bit of initial results from our clinics. We've got results now from 39 of our clinics. It looks as though we've got 17% of those clinics that had type 2 diabetes in their practice, or 623 patients. 64% of them had integrated the current American Diabetes Association clinical practice guidelines within their usual care. So that was really good to see, but one caveat there was that you know, the standards do change, and so one of the things that they were hoping that our project could bring to them was the ability to upload changes to the standards rapidly so they can move those across the clinic. 21% of them have a diabetes care coordinator. Again, I probably should have started that one, the caveat being that, yes, they may have a diabetes care coordinator, but it may not always be in proportion to the actual caseload that they're experiencing within their clinic. I think that was probably the norm and not the exception. If they did have a care coordinator, they were completely overwhelmed with the number of cases that they had to manage. 39% had some type of measurement to look at provider performance within their clinic, but that was also a very big hot topic for a quality improvement coaching resource or activity for them. 26% of the providers used at least one clinical, that should say one, not on, one clinical decision support rule, which was important for us to know as we went in. You know, a lot of times we heard, oh, yeah, our electronic medical record will give us a clinical decision support. It'll tell us when a foot exam is due, for example, but the providers turn it off. So, you know, just because you have it, are you using it? So, I mean, that was a good indicator that, you know, we've got some improvement there since only 26% of them were at least using one. And then 41% of the clinics were referring patients to diabetes self-management education, which there's my little star there. Their referral may not be to an accredited program, and I don't know if you're familiar with American Diabetes Association has an accredited program, so does the American Academy of Diabetes Educators. And because if you flash back to the earlier map that Jack showed, a lot of our catchment area is very rural, and so there is not a certified diabetes education program within driving distance for a lot of these patients. So although they're referring, I would say that that's a soft referral, and we're looking at ways to strengthen those referral patterns to an accredited program. Again, our co-authors of the project, they're here with us and not here with us, and special call out to my co-lead, Dr. Hansen, is a co-lead with the care coordination team, and my partner in crime. So thank you, Dr. Hansen. And I can take a couple questions before we move on to Dr. Keeney. Yes?
You mentioned insulin pumps, but the project focuses on type 2 diabetics, right?
Yes. It's very small for them. It was just more or less determining their overall capacity. If they had insulin pump trainers, more often they had continuing glucose monitoring availability. And we're able to transition to the technology a little bit easier because one of our next steps is rolling out type 1 and gestational diabetes very soon. That was one of the things that we wanted to encompass and find out about their overall availability of the technologies.
So a
continuing glucose monitoring is a similar device to an insulin therapy or insulin pump therapy. They wear a sensor for 72 hours, which continually monitors their blood glucose levels and allows the educator or the provider to find out if the patient is having routine lows in the middle of the night. You know, they can adjust insulin, for example, and help with different therapies. A lot of our area has been focusing on trying to transition to insulin therapy, even for type 2s. Is not just for the type 1 population. Earlier transition to that insulin where they're needed is helpful. So that CGMS or continuing glucose monitoring test is helpful in that therapy progression.
I'm a family physician. I've never heard of that.
Oh.
but I do exclusively work in Medicaid only and F2HD.
Oh, a lot of times they're not available usually for those types of patients, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, know that I think most all of the FC2HCs in our area are part of the BP project. And we also have native health facilities. So we do have some areas where there is higher prevalence and even more challenges to get them the resources.
And one of those things along that same line on that measure was the ability to download meter information. I mean, that was kind of the first step, and then, you know, pump, and then the CGM, and a lot of the clinics couldn't even have the capability to download a meter information. So that was more times than not where that measure stopped because they didn't even have that functionality. So,
yeah. Speak to the need versus capacity for that care coordination and the actual person to do that. Were you able to use maybe other health professionals like pharmacists that were certified diabetes educator to share some of that care coordination responsibility?
Well, one of the reasons why we were trying to assess is because if the clinic had that capability within their clinic staff, then we are assisting them to have those care coordination activities within their clinic. If they're not able or they don't have the capacity, we have centralized care coordination services that are run through the Beacon office that we're utilizing nurses and RDs, registered dietitians that are certified diabetes educators, to remotely help with the care coordination.
But in some communities, there is strong interest to have RDs to do that capacity to extend even further that ability where, like Jen said, the community didn't even have an RD.
Okay. Thank you.